morning, everybody, and good evening, everybody, and welcome to Mad Barn Live. This is our very first podcast. My name is Elisa. I'm here with Scott Ciesler, who is our founder and grand poobah of Mad Barn. If you've never seen him before, you're seeing him now, ladies and gentlemen. And we know he's been kind of out and around there doing the podcast circuit. So this isn't brand new to you, Scott, but it's certainly brand new to the company to be hosting our own podcast.
It is. This is session number one, and we'll see how it goes. It's, I don't know, fly or die, I guess.
Well, we're going to have fun with it. Scott and I have actually known each other for a long time. I was one of the original Mad Barn employees back in the day when there was maybe four of us, I guess.
There was four in total, yeah.
Right?
This is a good 6 years ago now.
I know. And now look at where we are. Like, when we were sitting there having that coffee at Starbucks, oh, five, six, 7 years ago.
I believe it.
Well, I think it was because I don't have that kind of cash, or at least I didn't have that kind of money to go to Starbucks back then. And we went, and I just can't believe we're sitting here in our own building, which has the Mad Barn logo on it. We're in our own studio. We have a huge warehouse in the back full of product. It's amazing.
It is pretty amazing, yeah. Actually, that we've come this far. But that's not what we're here to talk about
today.
To talk about us. We're here to talk about nutrition and how to feed horses, right? Because that is our mandate, correct?
It is, yeah. Yes. So if you've got grain on the brain, like we do, we're going to talk about that today. And I'm a horse owner. So what I want you to understand is some of these questions today are really coming. Yes, they're coming from you, and they've been, you know, kind of prompted to us to ask some of these questions today. But I'm asking them too as a horse owner myself, because, you know, coming from a horse family, I learned how to feed racehorses, which is energy, sugar, let's get them going so they're ready for the races. But feeding your horse that's living in the backyard at home, feeding your show horse, you know, feeding your barrel horse are all completely different things, correct?
They are very different things. And actually, even the way we feed racehorses today has changed considerably from the days when you and I probably started out in the resource business. And we've learned a lot, and you've seen this big shift away from the sugars and the starches and moving more towards how we naturally should feed a horse with forages. And even when we're feeding concentrates and more fibrous sources to enhance high gut fermentation and optimize basically the microbiome of the horse to get as much out of non-starch and non-sugar feeds as we can to feed the horse the way they evolved to eat.
Right. And we've evolved as owners too. You know, I mean, back in the day, you just bought a bag of feed and fed your horse. Now there's a lot of research that goes into this from the horse owner. And thank goodness there's a company out here like Mad Barn that's able to really help educate us in how to balance a horse's diet.
Yeah. I mean, that's really what our, like, this is, I mean, the whole purpose why we're here is to help horse owners to feed their horses appropriately. Because again, you know, you have this, you have this animal and they're like, it evolved to eat, you know, basically eat forage, spend most of its day wandering around eating lots of different, I guess, forages or shrubs and even like just various things that weren't grains and whatnot. And then we domesticated the horse and then we totally changed the way we feed it. We're trying to bring it back to make sure that, it is a more natural way to feed, but just to meet their, both their physiological needs and their ethological needs. So both from a behavior. And if you listen to any of the podcasts previously, there's just a lot of talk on forage, but then also a lot of talk on behavior because it's the both sides of the coin we have to meet. It's not just a chemical composition of feeding the horse. We actually need to, their psychological well-being is very important as well when we're feeding these horses.
Right. And so, you know, we get a lot of phone calls and a lot of conversations that take place at Mad Barn about behavior issues. And we're going to talk about that today, but we're going to talk really about the basics, like balancing out our horses' diets. How do we do that? Do we need a grain-free diet? What kind of things do we need to help with our horses' behavior? What do we need if we need more energy in the horse? And we've asked you as well to join us here today because we'd like to hear from you too. So if you have any questions for Scott, you're more than welcome to put them into the chat on the podcast, and we'll be able to answer those as they come in, and maybe we'll answer a little bit later on, just kind of see how things go. And look at this, they're popping up already. So we have people watching us, Scott.
Successful already. Yeah, this is great.
And the interesting thing is the first question is coming from somebody in the endurance business. And, you know, Scott and I both originally come from the racing industry. So, you know, endurance is another form of racing, and learning how to feed those horses is a completely different ball of wax than, you know, feeding your traditional standardbred thoroughbred. But we want to start off first, before we get to Pauline's question, we're going to start off first, just let's go peel the layers back here, Scott, and let's just say, what does it mean to feed a balanced diet?
Well, I think, I mean, it's obviously very basic when you say balance, like you think of scales and things in balance, but scale, like if it's just two pieces, you bring it into balance. The problem with nutrition is you have just a myriad of nutrients that you do need to bring into balance based on what that horse is doing and what it needs. But just kind of, you know, from a nutritionist standpoint, what we look at to bring things in balance, number one, energy. Mm-hmm. Energy is everything, right? We can talk about minerals and vitamins later and protein and all these other things, but we need to meet the energy demands of that horse. You know, we can be a little bit over, and over time that horse is going to gain weight and that can create problems. We can be a little bit under, and over time that horse is going to lose weight. It's going to become lethargic. It's not going to perform as well. So we really, and it's probably one of the hardest things to do is, you know, partly because it's hard to estimate the energy contents of feed, how much energy that horse is actually getting out of the feed. But we work away at that, and that's the first thing we want to do is we want to hit the energy requirements. And actually, after that, the rest is fairly easy. Mm-hmm. But the basics of hitting the energy requirement is knowing what's in the forage.
Right.
So again, I sound like a broken record of, we spend an inordinate amount of time looking at supplements, looking at complete feeds, looking at all these things we purchase for the horse, and then we just throw this hay in front of them, or we stick them out in a paddock somewhere, and they're like, well, here's some grass, and you eat that. And we we don't know what the chemical composition of that is, yet it makes up the vast majority of the energy, the protein, and the minerals and vitamins that horse is going to consume in a day. So again, broken record, we want to actually analyze the pastures and the forages so we know what's in there, and then we can estimate, okay, how much energy this horse is going to get. The rest is actually relatively easy, surprisingly. You would never think it's that easy based on the feed industry and all the marketing you see around, like all the different things you need to feed this horse and all these different, like, oh, you need this omega, you need this amino, you need to do this and that. And it's like, those things are actually relatively easy to hit once you get the energy right. So then we're going to balance out the protein. Coming back to, it's very fundamental about what's in that hay.
Right.
So then once we do that, we can do the macro minerals, we go down the micro minerals, and we do the vitamins, we balance those things out.
Okay, let's go back to the beginning here again. So I want to know what's in my horse's hay. How do I do that? How do I get it tested? How do I find that out?
So the best thing to do is take a sample and send it off to a lab. And so sampling, you know, we want to sample a minimum of 5 bales if it's bales, like small square bales, minimum of 5. Even with big round bales or big square bales, if we're using those, we want to get multiple samples because we want a composite of what we're feeding. Now, some people get quite specific about this and they're like, well, it's going to change, you know, fields change. And yes, that's true, but it is a biological system. There's a ton of buffering capacity, I'd like to say. So as long as we have a general idea where we're at, that's a great starting point. So we'll sample, and we can even sample pasture as well. And send, and then we send this off to a lab, they analyze it, they send it back to us. And we've developed a model that we provide online for free that we can input all this data into. And I think this is one of the questions we're going to get to later, is where do we come up with these nutrient requirements? And we balance some of the nutrient requirements of that horse.
Right.
And so once we've determined from a laboratory analysis what the horse is actually consuming, then we can figure out what else actually needs to go into that diet to make it completely balanced.
So what's important to say here as a customer, because I'm a customer as well of MapBurn, is that what I'm getting when I'm doing the diet evaluation and I'm sending in my forage analysis, I'm getting a program specifically to meet my individual horse's needs. It's not... this is what you need, and somebody else is getting something completely separate if they live in, let's say, BC, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So because if you have a hay analysis, we'll input your exact data. And so we have some off-the-shelf products, like if we're balancing the minerals and vitamins, right? Because just to take a step back, like the protein and energy things, we kind of direct you to the horse owner to where to go get that, because we're not going to supply it. It's easy to get. There's lots of ingredients we can use to feed that. The minerals and vitamins are what are hard in terms of, because there's so many that we need to balance. So when we do actually have a hay analysis, we get very, very specific about the amount. Now, sometimes, like, this off-the-shelf products work for a good majority of the people. And the reason for that is because we use thousands of samples to balance, like, to make those products. Mm-hmm. So there's a reason why it fits for a lot of people.
Right.
But if it doesn't, then we're gonna offer up a solution. That's not an off-the-shelf product. We're going to say, you know what, your hay may be a little bit outside of the normal parameters, so we're going to be like, this is what the ideal situation is. Mm-hmm. And then there's also, you have to take in consideration the practical aspect, right? So there's the theoretical perfection of a diet, and then there's the actual practical implementation of a diet where somebody's like, well, I can't do that, or this is too many ingredients to feed. And so then we'll work with that person to say, okay, well, let's get as close to it as we can, but still providing optimal health for your horse.
And simplifying it too, right? Because sometimes people are like their own mad scientists in the barn, right? They're concocting all these different formulas, and we can actually make that really simple. And if you're feeding 30, 35 horses or more, I mean, you don't want to be spending 2 hours in the feed room. If you can make this happen fairly quickly, that's key, right?
Well, then, honestly, this is one of the great things about having individual nutrition consultations is that we can talk to you and you can say, because some people do want to be the mad scientist, if you will. They want to mix and they want to be down to the milligram of what they're adding. And then there's others that are like, there needs to be some efficiency. There's cost considerations we need to take into account. Yeah. And we'll take all that into account and say, okay, here is the optimal for your situation, optimal for the horse and what you're doing in that case. Always with the horse's best interest in mind, right? Like, it's always about, okay, we need to do what's best for the horse in your situation.
Right. We always, here it is all about the love of the animal. I mean, all of us that work here are pretty much horse owners or involved in the horse industry. So, you know, and we use the products as well. And we've utilized Scott to help us all make our horses in tip-top shape. So, okay. So now we've covered some of these deficiencies and where we can help balance them out. But so once we've basically kind of balanced the diet, so we've taken a look at the hay analysis, and it's no big deal, right, Scott, if you don't have a hay analysis, right? If you are at a boarding facility, you tell us where you are, we can get fairly close without the actual hay analysis, correct?
Yeah, so this is the great part about having such a big database or library of forages and different labs that we work with. I've even said, take a picture of it, send it to us, because we can get a relative maturity based on the, you know, how much seed head there is on it, what, you know, different types of grasses that may be in it. We can go, okay, this is where we're at. It's not a perfect thing, but it's better than just, I guess, wildly guessing. And so, yeah, we have this huge library to draw on. If we know some species that are in your hay and we know the relative maturity, we can get pretty close, at least give us a barometer of where we're going. And then there's also just the feedback from the horse owner, right? Like, you give a diet recommendation, and then a month later, the owner comes back and says, well, my horse is losing some weight, and that's not where we're going for. Well, we can easily adjust that. So we may be just a little off, so we'll make some adjustments to the diet and maybe add some soluble fiber in the form of beet pulp, maybe a little bit of oil just for energy from a fat standpoint to get the diet balanced.
Plus, you have to tweak periodically as the year goes on, as the horse ages, as the horse comes into work, as the horse, takes some time off. Things have to be tweaked, right?
Yeah, it's never black and white. Like, it's never like this is one diet and it's going to be perfect forever. It's very much a conversation going back and forth between the horse owners and the nutritionist. And the idea is you have the person that's with the horse that has the practical experience with their horse. And then you have a group of experts that know exactly how to, like, okay, this is what we need to do to get you to where you want to be. And this is the dynamic we're trying to deliver, I guess, to the customer base.
Yeah, because you really do have a relationship, and that's what we want at Mad Barn, is for you to develop a relationship with your nutritionist. So they're part of your team too.
Absolutely.
Right? You can call on them if the horses, something has changed and there's an issue with the horse or whatever. They are available at your fingertips, which is an amazing thing. I mean, who has that?
No, it's true. I mean, it's honestly, it's been a bit of an experiment to like to provide this to our customers, but it's really what we wanted to do and be able to deliver to people. And it's essentially coming up with a model that works for everybody, for the customer, for us, and to be able to deliver the information to that they can utilize. And, like, you know, if you talk about balancing and whatnot, like, we don't expect the horse owners to be nutritionists, but what we do provide is complete transparency in the sense that we do your diet for you. We have the online model at madbarnfeed.com, which is free to use for anybody. I mean, there's other models that exist. The NRC, which we can talk about later a little bit, has a model online. It's a much more basic level of model, but it gives you kind of the key nutrient balances. Things like FeedXL, where you have to actually pay for it to use, and gives you a bit more user-friendly walkthrough, where ours is, we provide it for free, but it is goes much more in depth. Yeah, gives you much more flexibility. But the great part about that is, like, at the end of the day, yes, we're still a company, and so you're like, well, you're biased. Of course, we're biased. Everybody has biases. But here's just the raw data. You have it. If you want to take it somewhere else, get a second opinion, and talk to your vet about it. The raw data exists there, and we just give it to you.
Yeah, because we're really part of your team, right? I mean, you've got your vet, your blacksmith, and us. Okay, let's talk about Forge. And a lot of people, you know, want to start looking at this forage first diet. What's a forage first diet?
Well, it should be every horse's diet is forage okay. first, because that's what they evolved to eat. And forage, a lot of people mistake like forage is just grass, but right. like I kind of alluded to before, it could be different types of shrubs, browse, different things. Horses will eat an amazing variety of things. Mm-hmm. Now, it gets very kind of there's not as much variety, I guess, in the current horse diet, but so the forage should make up the majority, because this is, you know, this is really when we start formulation, how we work with it, because depending on what your horse is doing, we need to select the appropriate forage for them, right? So if you have a maintenance horse that, you know, called pasture ornament, mm-hmm, if you will, mm-hmm. you really can't have them out on cool season grasses in pasture, just free choice, because they will gain way too much weight. Mm-hmm. We see the incidence of metabolic syndrome going through the roof. I think laminitis, like say about 10% of the horse population suffers from every year. So these things we really have to be cognizant of, mm-hmm. and what we're making available to the horse and what they're doing. Now you take a racehorse, for instance, mm-hmm. you want to, that's doing just a tremendous amount of work, or a 3-day eventer, you probably do want them on pasture, mm-hmm. because you want those calories, you want that protein, that high level. Or we want a really immature forage or hay selection, mm-hmm. we're going to give that horse, because it's going to be much higher in energy, higher in protein, a little lower in fiber. But at the end of the day, we want that horse eating a lot of forage, mm-hmm. and we want them to spend 10 to 12, 14 hours a day eating forage.
And critical that they're constantly eating too, which is something I think a lot of people know, but it is critical that they're constantly eating.
It is critical. And like, not to, like, you go into a lot of barns and they're like, okay, we do our last feeding at 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. and we give them mm-hmm. 2 flakes of hay. Well, you consider what 2 flakes of hay is, mm-hmm. 2 kilos, and you're like, a horse can eat that in about an hour, mm-hmm. hour and a half. Yep. So that takes you to 10. And then what time are you coming out in the morning? Right. And then again, this is the theoretical and the practical come colliding together, because nobody wants to come out and clean a whole bunch of leftover hay mm-hmm. out of their mm-hmm. out of their stalls. Like, oh, feed them 2 months. We cut back. But you kind of do want that leftover. Mm-hmm. And there's ways around that, you know, using things like hay nets or different mm-hmm. things to cut down on that, ensuring the horse has access to forage all the time. Ideally, I mean, they're outside moving as much as possible mm-hmm. and eating as much as possible, providing as natural environment as you can for them.
Right. And then we get into, you know, okay, well, I'm kind of skipping ahead here a little bit, but we get into some horses, like race horses, are stuck in that stall for 23 hours a day. So we have to figure out a way to keep them moving and keep them eating. You know, then, like you said, you have your lawn ornaments that are out there too, that are constantly eating, and we need to kind of monitor that as well. So we go from one extreme to the other.
Yeah. And so, I mean, some of that is like, we just honestly, some management has to change or needs mm-hmm. to change, because it's not an ideal situation to keep a racehorse in the stall for 23 mm-hmm. hours a day. You want them out and you want them grazing, mm-hmm. but they're not the ones getting it. And then you get these pasture ornaments, I guess, if you will, that are out grazing, and you're like, ugh.
Yeah.
They need to be more on a, not necessarily in, but on a more on a dry lot or a, you know, a track system or something like that, that we can come up with the works, mm-hmm. I guess, with modern day horse, keeping horses. But I mean, that's the ways the systems exist. So then you start to do incremental improvements, and like, and people do it, right? Like, you know, a horse that's going to be in a stall 23 hours, they try to enrich the stall environment, mm-hmm. whether it's put, you know, just the balls the horse can play with, or just something, even the salt on a rope, which we
get him a goat.
We don't ever recommend the salt on a rope as a source of like salt, but you know, if it's something for the horse to play with, it gives some enrichment in the stall. I mean, those are considerations you can start to put in.
You know what? When he said salt, that made me think about something. One of the coolest things that you taught me about salt, you know, we all kind of, well, a lot of us put salt in our horse's diet, but it's one of those things you just kind of, yeah, that's good, right? Scott had the coolest way of explaining to me how you know you have fed the horse the correct amount of salt, which was, like you said, to have a kind of a separate pile of your salt, right? And if you come back and the horse has eaten all that salt, the next time you give him a little bit more until you get to a stage where he's left some salt, right? And that's when you know they've got enough salt in their diet. I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah, it's actually the one nutrient that they have nutritional knowledge of, I guess. They'll seek out salt. And like, you know, talk about, sometimes you talk to people, well, I feed a block. And you're like, do you ever see the horse actually chewing it with their teeth? Like, the blocks are not the best delivery method. I know they're super convenient, mm-hmm. But even out in pasture, for instance, like if you have any cover, you can just put a corner dish of salt out there for mm-hmm. them. But that you're absolutely right. Like keep giving them salt until they say, no, I'm good. That's enough.
Yeah.
It is. So I think we didn't really touch on it too much, but we talked about like, kind of like what are the most commonly deficient nutrients,
right.
I think.
Yeah.
And salt would be number one. Mm-hmm. And that's because it's not really natural. Like it's not any feedstuff. Unless you live maybe on the coast, like near an ocean, mm-hmm. you might get mm-hmm. some level of sodium in there. And then horses sweat a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So they excrete a lot of sodium. And so what we find in a lot of diets is there's just simply not enough salt being fed. And so that's where the recommendations come of just feed loose free choice salt. Yeah. And once they're done, once they clean it up, or once they're leaving something behind, you're like, okay, I've met the requirements. Mm-hmm. The horse knows better than we do for right. certain about it. Just make it available to them
yep.
and that'll take care of it.
Yeah, I think that's the neatest thing. Plus, it's way cheaper than buying the blocks in a sense, right? Like the block just sits there and gets all gooey. Unless you have, and I've very rarely seen one that absolutely loves to lick that salt block. So,
well, I mean, they don't. I mean, I wouldn't say they hate it. Like you see them in stalls and they'll use them and people say, oh, they're using them. But like, again, it's especially in hot weather, horses start working mm-hmm. hard. It's just not going to be enough. So,
okay. Well, that gets us to electrolytes then.
Sure.
Right. Because, you know, that's another thing. Sometimes people I find will be like, oh, I feed the electrolytes in the summer, but they don't do it in the winter because they don't think the horse is sweating the same right. way. It should be a daily part of the diet. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, salt, you don't even need commercial electrolytes. We sell electrolytes and you don't even like for there's circumstances you absolutely should use them, like
sure.
high performance horses or yep. during exercise and after exercise.
Mm-hmm.
But the element that you're missing the most is sodium, which is just mm-hmm. salt. There's lots of potassium in your horse's diet. There's typically lots of calcium. If the diet's balanced appropriately, there'd be lots of enough magnesium.
Mm-hmm.
And then what there won't be enough of is sodium. And so really a lot of times you just need salt
right.
or sodium bicarb. You can use bicarb as well to get the horse to get the diet balanced in terms of sodium. And then we use electrolytes very purposefully to improve performance or increase hydration.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's endurance horses or whether mm-hmm. it's 3-day eventing
mm-hmm. yeah.
or race horses, obviously it's sweating a lot. Then we have like programs we put together for how much electrolytes we're going to add.
Right.
But your daily, you want to make sure that horse is getting enough salt. And in wintertime in particular, because salt is what's going to drive water intake. And winter is like one of our biggest problems in the horse population.
Getting
it's colic.
Well, for sure. Yeah.
It was a lot of times it's just driven by not consuming enough water. Mm-hmm. And you don't consume enough water because you're not consuming enough salt.
Mm-hmm.
The two go hand in hand in terms of driving water intake. You need salt intake. So
right.
it's one of the easiest, honestly, the least inexpensive prevention methods of colic is feeding an appropriate amount of salt.
Salt. Yeah. So that's
sound like a broken record.
No. This is good. This is all good stuff. So that's a common deficiency we'd find is salt. And is there anything else that kind of always rears its angry head?
Yeah. Zinc, copper, and selenium would be right. like the big three, I'd say, in trace minerals.
We could have a whole podcast about selenium.
We would do that.
Oh, yeah. Not today. Because
my incomplete PhD is actually almost all on selenium.
Okay. Great. Because I'm telling you that we could call it selenium, the myth, the legend, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it comes with all this bad mojo around it sometimes that we have to explain a lot of times isn't bad.
Certainly, because I mean, toxicity seems to be the number one concern with mm-hmm. roads around selenium, but yet the bigger problem is actually deficiency. Mm-hmm. But like, because selenium, like toxicity is an acute thing you see very obvious, mm-hmm. deficiency just kind of hides underneath. Mm-hmm. So you know, the whole iceberg thing,
mm-hmm.
toxicity is at the top, deficiency is the whole thing underneath, mm-hmm. which is actually the bigger problem that we're not recognizing.
People in Western Canada have issues with selenium different than people say here in Ontario too, right?
Yeah, there's selenium maps you can see. So like through the Midwest in the US in particular, mm-hmm. there's some very high selenium soil areas. So yes, selenium toxicity is definitely a concern in those areas. But as you get to the coast,
mm-hmm.
They're going to be selenium deficient for sure. So it has to be coming from supplements. And even from that side, and we're not going to get into it today very much, but maybe in a future talk, when you look at the research on selenium, we have very low requirements for the horse, which I think are probably too low. We have, I think I said, our vitamin E requirements a little too high mm-hmm. and the selenium too low. These things need to probably work themselves out, which in time, I'm sure they will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would like to talk about that at some point. And we should mention, too, to the people who are watching, I hope there's people watching us today from the States, because we're not just here in Canada. You know, we are, come from Canada, where we are all Canucks, but we have some great, not anymore.
We have a few PhD nutritionists down in Kentucky now as well. So
yeah, in the bluegrass state.
Yeah.
I mean, why not? And hey, we got some more questions coming up. You know, we should probably take a few questions, but I hope there are people watching us from the States today, because we're down there as well. We are madbarn.com in the United States, madbarn.ca here in Canada.
Is this like a version of a commercial break?
Would you like that?
No. Let's answer some questions. Because somebody, we were talking about water. What about water quality? Heard.
Hold on. I'm the one asking the questions. Oh, right, you're the genius. I'm the one asking the questions. So Julie has sent us in a question. What about water quality? Hard water, iron content, etc. Good question, Julie. We get that a lot.
Yeah, it's a great question, because mm-hmm. it's something we overlook a lot, is the quality of the water we're giving the horse, given how much water they will consume in a day, particularly in hot weather. Hardness isn't so much a big concern. The iron content definitely mm-hmm. is a concern. Again, if you do have high iron, which a lot of farms do because they're on well water or high sulfur, there's filters you can put in place. There's very inexpensive filters you can put in place that will filter out a good chunk of the iron. And I would highly recommend using those. And I think one thing we rarely ever talk about is like even just bacterial contamination. Now, right. I mean, obviously there's standards we have for well water, so a lot mm-hmm. of times that gets mm-hmm. tested. But it is important, particularly if you're feeding it in trough situations. Mm-hmm. You can have bacteria build up, and you definitely, you want to control that, right? Like you want the highest quality water going in. So it's no different than feed quality. You want the highest quality ingredients you can going into your horse, because that's going to optimize health. So water tests, like, I mean, you can tell if you're in high iron, like you get the staining.
You can smell it. And,
well, yeah, there's the sulfur you get mm-hmm. from smelling it. So if you have those things. The other thing, too, is like some people have it in their homes, and like if there's anybody here with IR horses, iron seems to be the hot topic in insulin-resistant mm-hmm, horses. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to dive into that as much today, but it is in people as well, right? Mm-hmm. Some of these issues with high iron intake is also is a human health issue. Mm-hmm. And so we've been running situations that people have filters on at the barn, and they're like, what about your house water? And they're like, oh, no, I don't know. And you're like, you really should be doing that as well.
Sure.
And again, it doesn't need to be a very expensive system. I mean, you go to the high end to reverse osmosis and get rid of pure water, mm-hmm. or you can just use a simple RV filter that they have for like campers and whatnot.
Now, let's say someone has a concern about their water and they've had it tested. Can they send us the results of their testing so that we can kind of, again, balance according to that too?
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you send us your water test and you're like, we'll average out kind of what the water intake is for your mm-hmm. horse, and then we'll contribute, okay, well, how much iron is this horse consuming mm-hmm. from the water? And the iron content in the water is more important because it's more bioavailable. Like I think sometimes we get a little tied up in like, the iron content and the feed stuff, but the bioavailability or what actually gets absorbed is really, really low. And so it can be quite high, but the horse is going to absorb very little. But in water, absorption rates are much higher. So we will take that into consideration. So you send it to us and we'll factor it in terms of balancing out the zinc and copper essentially to your iron content.
Speaking of iron. Cole has a question about iron. She says, I'm interested to hear more about iron. I have high iron in my water and soil. Should I avoid iron supplements? Iron in my supplements?
Yeah, you should avoid iron in all your supplements. There is, it would be an extremely rare circumstance that you would need to add iron into a horse supplement. Now, so I'm going to have to come back to this, but one of the things that comes up, because on our tags, it'll say iron and there'll be an iron content on there. Mm-hmm. And then we get to the question a lot of times is like, why are you adding iron to your products? And like, we're not. Mm-hmm. Iron's ubiquitous. So like, you know, somebody said there's high iron in their soil. Of course it is, because it's the most abundant mineral in soil. It's everywhere. And so in our ingredients, there's always going to be iron. And like there's some culprits in there, like that calcium phosphate, which is a common phosphorus source we use for feeding animals, which tends to have quite high iron content, and there's no way to get it out. Mm-hmm. And so when we use it in, say, a mineral vitamin supplement, it contributes some level of iron. And I will come back with, again, that iron's not very bioavailable. Mm-hmm. So there's still a lot of work to be done in horses in terms of, it's not just how much iron the horse is consuming, but how much is actually going to get absorbed by the horse. Mm-hmm. With the exception of very specific circumstances, mm-hmm. it would be a vet prescribed circumstance where you would ever want to add extra iron in terms of like ferrous sulfate or iron oxide in the feed stuff. If you see those things on ingredient labels, I mean, there's some products out there back from honestly from the old racehorse days, because you know what, feed iron, you get more red blood cells. Mm-hmm. But that's not how it works. Physiology doesn't work like that, but it still lingers on. It's still around today. So I would say as much as possible, avoid any supplemental iron. At the same time, understand that all mineral vitamins are going to have some level of iron. Now, and this is, here's something too. You talk about different regions, like in Canada, well, even this is changing a little bit now, but we used to be required, you had to list the iron content. Even if you weren't adding it, you should, so people knew how much was in there. So that's why we have it on our tag. You go into different states, because it's state by state regulation. They don't always have to list iron content on there. It doesn't mean it's not in there. We just didn't have to list it.
Right.
If we take it and sample it, there's going to be some level of iron content. And we do a lot of that, actually. Yeah. We sample a lot of feeds and things just to get the full analysis. So we're giving people, you know, a complete analysis, which isn't always available, readily available anyways.
Well, there you go. No iron for you, Nicole. All right, Pauline. We're going to go back to Pauline. She was our first person to ask a question. So hopefully Pauline is still sticking around. She's probably on her second or third glass of wine. Okay.
Speaking of which, I think
that's a good idea.
Right. Yes. Next time.
We're doing that next time for sure. Okay. Questions for 50-mile endurance horse. These are pretty cool horses. This endurance stuff is amazing.
I do have to interject here. This is one of my favorite sports now. Like coming from the racehorse world, getting introduced to the endurance world. I mean, the care for the horses is like, it's from what I've experienced anyways, which is mainly the Octra group or the Ontario group. It's phenomenal. And like the horse is number one. Like, so they're doing amazing things, but they're like, no matter what, like if there's any question, the horse isn't capable of carrying on. They're like, no, we're stopping. Like, this is, so it's phenomenal to see this amazing group of people.
It is. It is. I took a call the other day. It was really funny. And I said, oh, is it a racehorse? She's like, oh yeah, it's a racehorse. It's going into a 20-mile race next week. I'm like, what kind of racehorse is that? And then, of course. So endurance. So it's an amazing sport. Might be one that we could take up too down the line.
I think it might be a little heavy for your...
We'll get you a nice big one.
Yeah.
All right. So Pauline wants to know, how to get the right amount of protein for top line. Top line's a big question for us all the time. How to get the right amount of protein for top line and muscle development, amount of vitamin E needed. Well, she's got a whole bunch of questions in here. How to boost energy for the entire ride right through to the final trot out. Well, that's a loaded question. So there's a lot of things here. So, top line, so muscle development, vitamin E, and boosting energy.
So it kind of just break it down. So the protein question, it does come a lot, top line. Mm-hmm. And so I think as anybody that's lifted weights understands, it's the resistance that develops muscle. You just need to ensure that there's adequate nutrition to let the muscle develop. So you can never feed just a supplement and make muscle. There's got to be the work component. So the question is, let's get the appropriate amount of protein into that horse. And again, this comes back to why we have this whole model, why we break out all the amino acid components of the feed stuff, the essential amino acids. Now, I will be the first one to admit our knowledge in the horse is somewhat limited in terms of amino acid requirements, but we do our best using multiple species, but the knowledge we do have of the horse to optimize what the balance would look like. And it really, again, coming back to forage analysis, knowing how much protein we're getting from the horse, because what particularly with endurance horses or any top elite athlete, what we don't want to do is overfeed protein, because overfeeding protein is actually going to decrease performance.
Okay.
And again, this will save the whole why that is for some another time, but it's getting a balance, and that requires knowing what the forage is going in, and then we can balance any other protein needs for the horses. And I think we talked beforehand, and we're going to talk about like what are the ideal protein sources. And here's another podcast topic: soybean meal.
Oh, right?
This is the hated soybean meal. But honestly, there's a reason soybean is so abundantly grown, because it's one of the best amino acid profiles and high protein coming from a plant. Now, again, there's been a lot of genetic modification of the soybean and whatnot, but it does. Is one of the best sources of protein from a plant-based protein. Now, there are other protein options out there. And one of the fun things we did was a black soldier fly larvae experiment. Still ongoing. Some of the results will come out from that. Another one, like yeast proteins are options. So they're extremely high-quality protein sources. Mm-hmm. There's palatability, and there's also cost to consider with these types of things. And then there's milk proteins, which some people are okay with, some people not. Mm-hmm. The horse digests them fine. It's really, it's kind of like the soybean thing. Some people just prefer not to feed it for different reasons. Mm-hmm. But those are like all really high quality protein sources we can use. And we can use lower quality protein sources and then supplement with synthetic amino acids as well.
Okay.
As an option. Okay. And that's ideally, I mean, you could really get things dialed in using single amino acids to, because you can drop the protein down lower and then you can just put the essential limiting amino acids in. Mm-hmm. And so again, some of this involves having like, you know, really accurate analysis of what you're feeding. Right. You don't want to be like, I guess the less accurate your analysis of the feeding, the more you kind of want to overcorrect, like mm-hmm. be a little bit over, may not be ideal. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be that combination of balancing the protein sources and work to make mm-hmm. top line happen.
And I would think for Pauline, because it's a pretty loaded question that she gave us, her best option really would be to fill out the diet evaluation form on the website, send that in and let us help her, right?
Honestly, that's the best option for everybody, because right. then you get your individual really program. As much as possible getting as accurate diet formulation as you can for your horse.
Yeah.
But I think your next question was then how much vitamin E?
Yes.
This is a great question. Now, I think we, there's been different people talk about it. It's not just vitamin E on its own, but it's selenium as well. So mm-hmm. like in an endurance horse, we generally recommend going higher. So like 4 milligrams of selenium minimum per day, and then probably the 2000 IUs of vitamin E. If you're going to a really high fat diet, like if you're like a high end 100 miler and you're really pounding the calories from fat to the horse, you're going to want to put the vitamin E higher, just do the oxidative stress of the amount of fat we're feeding. And then push also the selenium even higher, 6-7 milligrams per day.
So you'd be looking at the products with us, the vitamin E and selenium and the W3?
Yeah, I mean, those are definitely mm-hmm. options to add to the horse's diet that provide both the vitamin E and selenium, because W3 has a high level of vitamin E already.
Mm-hmm. And vitamin E is great for energy, right?
Well, not energy. The W3 is great for energy, and you're getting the vitamin E at the same time.
So really, an endurance horse, you'd probably suggest the W3, correct?
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Big time.
Yeah. And then, like, again, you can even just use a less expensive, because you may need more mm-hmm. total calories mm-hmm. than mm-hmm. what you're just going to get from the W3 in terms of the amount you're going to feed. Right. Again, it depends on what the horse is doing. And I think some of the questions we'll get to will come to getting some calories into horses. Right. What's the best way to do that?
Yeah. So, Pauline, send your stuff in to us at Mad Barn. We'll be more than happy to take a look at it. I know there's more questions coming up. There's so many of them, Scott.
Can't get through these.
I can't believe this. We thought nobody was going to watch and look. I think there's
one
here.
More though. So how do you get
to finish? Hold on. How to boost energy for the entire ride right through to the final trot out.
So again, a lot of that's just, you know, is conditioning, making sure the horse is conditioned appropriately for what you're trying to do. Like going into an endurance event and the horse was not conditioned, I'm expecting to just also perform. I get that's obvious. But again, and just conditioning to diet. So like if you're going to want to feed a higher fat diet mm-hmm. to this horse, but it takes time for him to adapt to use that diet. So you want to be at least 6 to 8 weeks of a higher fat diet so they're getting enough energy from that. And then you can tweak the carbohydrates. And again, this is where working with a nutritionist comes in, where you're like, okay, we're going to move, you know, X amount of beef pulp. Maybe we'll put a little bit of oats in there just for a little quicker carbohydrate punch to last, or using even a complete feed that fits the bill in those scenarios.
So if Pauline has, say, 6 to 8 weeks before you are doing this 50-mile endurance, then now's the time, right? We can start to implement those changes now.
Yeah, well, I think we're getting to the end of their season, but
unless she's in Florida.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. A lot of people ship down, so mm-hmm. You would you want your horse conditioned to the diet that you are moving towards, and obviously the exercise program as well. Mm-hmm. But soluble fiber and fat, and I mean I think that's a pretty commonplace of where we're going to it, and it doesn't need to be complicated, right? Like it can be as simple as like I'm feeding flax, bee pulp, and oil. And that's my, along with Scott a great forage, based program.
And it doesn't have to be that complicated. Like you say, you don't have to go for the fancy bags of this and that. It can be as simple as what you just said, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on here. We've got Elise, who is asking, what are your thoughts about bee pulp? Hey, this is a great question because, again, this is a super product to use. I feed my mare Amino Trace, W3 oil, spirulina, and jagulin. I soak it with 1 cup of alfalfa pellets and 1 cup of beet pulp, simply as a filler to mask everything else. We understand that. Should beet pulp be rinsed after soaking to remove iron, even if it's only a small amount?
Again, I would say for most people, it's unnecessary. Like if I had a horse that was really insulin resistant, then I would say absolutely. You probably go ahead and rinse it. If your horse is healthy otherwise and not hypersensitive, then no, like a small amount of bee pulp doesn't need to be rinsed. Just soaking and feeding it, you just fine the way it is.
Okay, so wait, let's go back to that, because so then she wants to know about, okay, well, she's, okay, she's feeding Neonatrace, W3, spirulina, jagulin, soaking it with alfalfa pellets and bee pulp. And really that's a pretty complete diet right there. Aminotrace, for those of you who maybe aren't familiar with that, is our special product for insulin resistant horses, or metabolic horses, we'd say, right?
Yes. So, I mean, that's what it was formulated for originally, but then, I mean, obviously it can be used for other
as well.
Like if you, I don't know, you always use the example when we're talking to everybody on the team, like, well, what do you use Aminotrace for? You're like, this is what it was developed for.
Right.
We were doing a ton of custom formulas for people with these copper and zinc levels. And I was like, they're very similar. So like, if we just make a product, it'll cut down. And for people that maybe don't want to go to the excruciating detail of balancing their own, every single mineral, we made that for them. But then when you look at it for even other diets, it's great. And like, you still cost less than most hoof supplements.
And Embomedi is the sister product too, we could say, right?
Well, it's the original.
It's the OG, but it's you can go to that as well, which comes in at a lower cost as well.
Yeah. So, but it's still a great product. So we, this is what you run into. You're like, well, why do you have both, you know, and then one's a lot more expensive. And there's, you know, there are slight differences. We use the natural vitamin E and the Aminotrace, the phosphorus source, just to reduce the iron. They talked about the, using dicalcium phosphate. It's usually high in iron. Well, the phosphorus source we use in Aminotrace is quite low in iron. They're almost non-existent. So that reduces any kind of contaminating, what we call contaminating iron, just residual iron from ingredients. And so, you know, that does drive the cost up. And quite frankly, like, not all the horses need that high level of copper and zinc. So, like, we're, I don't know, I'm a minimalist. Like, you know, the lowest amount to get the optimal result is what I want to do, both cost and anything we're putting into the horse.
I feed Omnady. All our broodmares get it in Kentucky. My show horse gets it here. I love the product. I think it's made a really big difference. A to his top line. I mean, even the lady that I have that comes out and does the massaging, the chiropractic work to him, has said what a difference she thinks it's made. And she's a person who lives around this area, so she's familiar with the Mad Barn products. But yeah, Omnade is a great product. Aminotrace too.
All right. Just a, so one of the things you mentioned, top line, I want to bring this up because I think this gets overlooked. I'm willing to do a whole session on this, probably with somebody a lot smarter than me about microbiome. But there's really nice work showing that like mineral vitamin deficiencies don't just impact the horse, they impact the bacteria that live in the gut. And so like, because there's lots of horses out there that don't get any mineral vitamins. So sometimes when you start feeding them, just the boost in the high gut activity alone. So you can do see things like top line coming and ballooning because the amount of energy now that's getting absorbed from the high gut, the where it's supposed to really get absorbed for a horse, has increased dramatically. So it's not... it's not just what the horse do. There's the entire microbiome we have to consider when we're feeding this animal.
Okay. Now, Elise, she's sticking, she is pointing the finger out at us. She's saying, don't forget about your thoughts on bee pulp for forage.
So
that's the way she's saying it.
This is basically how I approach it. Like, you take a forage base, depending on what the horse is doing. And so say it's not meeting the horse's energy requirement. So it's going to maximize its intake on this forage, whatever that may be. You're like, well, we're still in a deficit. Well, we can take something like bee pulp, which is similar to a forage in the sense that the vast majority of that bee pulp is getting fermented in the hindgut. Now, it doesn't have some of the attributes of forage do, like a lot of chew time, because they can eat bee pulp relatively fast. Even just like what we call effective fiber, like the stimulation of the gut, it's not going to have the same as like long stem Haywood. But if we want to add more energy, it's a great source because it's almost the same energy level as oats. So what we're getting is basically high gut fermentation without the negative impacts of sugar and starch that we might have feeding something like a grain. So absolutely, it's, you know, so over and over again, this is the go-to, right? The forage base, if it's not cutting it, we need to add more. Then in comes the bee pulp. A little bit of flax always for the omega-3s, some soluble fiber and flax. I mean, it's kind of like the wonder food, right? Of all, you get protein, you get, you know, the fiber, the very soluble fiber from it, and you get the wonderful omega-3s. It's, you know, it's the highest omega-3 plant source that we have readily available. And that's, and so yeah, bee pulp's the go-to. Now,
well, a lot of people like Timothy alfalfa cubes too, though, right?
So the thing to realize about Timothy alfalfa cubes is, I mean, you basically just took hay and compressed it into a smaller form.
But so the chew time would be longer there. You keep them busy, right?
Once you pellet it, because you've ground it fine and you've pelleted, so you've already done a good chunk of the work of chewing it up. That they would like the mastication process of taking long hay. A lot of that's just the breaking down. And now we've done that mechanically for the horse, so they can eat that much, much faster. Now, there'd be a slight difference between beet pulp and say alfalfa and Timothy. It won't be huge in terms of chew time. Like using something like straw, for instance, which I know we don't feed a lot of here in North America, but in Europe they do utilize straw more, and you see it more here now. Your chew time goes way up. So if you're looking for a way to, like, you know, if we had a horse we need to reduce calories but we want to keep them eating straw, that becomes a great choice. And I've just gone on a total tangent here from bee pulp, but you know, again, it's, you know, picking the right forage or feeds that meet that horse's needs, right, both just nutritionally and psychologically as well.
Okay. All right. So we got Elise covered. Oh my goodness. I can't believe all these questions. This is great. Is there a ballpark parameter we should look for horse hay? Okay. Hold on. Let me just read this again. Is there ballpark parameters we should look for in horse hay, percentage of protein, et cetera?
Yes, we get asked this question a lot. So it's a great question. Thanks, Becky, for bringing this in, because it brings up a great point. There's ballparks in the sense that depending on what your horse is doing is where the ballparks will land, because obviously there's a wide range. In very general terms, and I think everybody gets this, as hay's mature, energy decreases, protein decreases, fiber goes up. I mean, so essentially, you go from a maintenance horse. If your maintenance horse is over here, this is where you want the most mature hay, over to your hardest working horse, you want the least mature hay. So if you're looking for ballpark figures, if you went to, like, I guess the lowest quality we call hay style, you'd be down into like 8% protein, upwards of 60% NDF, a DE value of like even 1.9 or even a little bit lower megacals per kilo. I apologize to if there are Americans on here, because they won't love the kilos, but the metric system rules.
So. Oh, we just got a comment. She's in Vermont. So it's
in another.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry.
I'll get it flipped over to pounds as well. To like a much higher quality if you're into sorry, I shouldn't read the screen while I talk. If we're going to a higher quality, we'd be up into upwards 12, even up to 14% crude protein, in the low 40s NDF, with a DE value that might be pushing 2.2 megacals, even up to 2.3, depending on the species of hay we're using. And just to put this in context, so like if we go from your average 1,100-pound horse, I can flip back for a little bit, but 1,100-pound horse is going to need 16 to 18 megacals of energy a day. Up to a hardworking horse is going to need to say 30 to 32 megacals. Okay. So it's almost a double when you go from that first day I was talking about, the low energy would provide that 18 megacals. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's 1.8 megacals per kilo, horse eats around 10 kilos of dry matter, and we're hitting right on the ballpark for that. Then we go up to this really high energy, needs 30, but we only are getting 2.3 megacals out of a really, we'll call young and mature hay. So that would be 23 megacals. So we still have a deficit, right?
Yeah.
So this is what we're talking about when we balance the diet. We can maximize forage intake. We may get up to 25, 26 megacals. We still have like maybe 4 to 6 megacals to make up. And we'll do that with other ingredients, things like fat, which we use fat and oil interchangeably in the horse industry, because almost all fat sources we feed to horses are liquid, oil, or vegetable oil. So it's oil. And we'll use that to boost up the energy content of the diet.
Actually, that was one of the questions that we wanted to talk about too. And we can do that one right now, just because it fits where we are. So with horses in competition or heavy work, what are the main things we need to add to their diet? So as you said, we're adding the oil, say, for the energy, right?
Yeah.
What else would we maybe consider adding? More of something? Boosting something?
Again, like oil, soluble fiber is what, like, as the energy requirements go up, we want to go to more and more soluble fiber. So that just means, because when we say soluble fiber, that means it's going to digest more. The extent of digestion in the high guns will be greater. So the absorption of basically called volatile fatty acids that can turn into glucose in the horse. And that's how we want the horse to get its glucose, is from the hindgut, not from the small intestine, from starch and sugars mainly. And then fat's another great one, because it's a great opportunity, very, very energy dense, reduces the thermal load on the horse. So again, I want to start talking about endurance horses and thermal load. Fat content is a great way to reduce the thermal load on a horse while providing a lot of calories.
And that diet would change too as the season goes, because as the horse is kind of working and getting ready for show season and competition season, and then as the horse lets down from that, right? So we're changing that diet again.
Yeah, and I mean, you can really, like, if you really want to dive into this, like, like a really a very high level competitive horse, for instance, like your number one detriment to speed, height, or performance is weight.
Right.
So cutting weight is going to be give you your biggest bang for your buck, assuming everything else is perfect, right? Mm-hmm. Assuming your diet's perfect, assuming the horse is in great health, and all these other things are perfect. Cutting weight off the horse. And so gut fill is a huge chunk of this weight. So you can start getting into ways, okay, can we, you know, reduce the water holding capacity of the feeds we're feeding this horse as we come into competition without creating digestive disturbances and optimize. And the great thing about fat and oil is a great parameter to provide high, really dense calories with low amount of weight that's going in the horse. So for the, 98% of the people, though, I would just say, yeah, you want to ramp up, we'll ramp up consistently. We're going to keep it consistent, and then we're going to ramp down some workload. And we'll just keep a nice, even diet. Mm-hmm. If you want to get into that, like the last 1%, really start tweaking, there are things we can do there. But you would want to be under a strict guidance of a nutritionist, working together very tightly. You just don't want to be freewheeling on that one.
Okay, actually, and here's a question that's an easy answer, and we get it asked all the time. Becky writes asking, have Mad Barn supplements been approved for FEI use?
Yeah, you don't really get approved for FEI use. What you do is you don't have ingredients in them that are banned by FEI. So FEI doesn't approve anybody supplements per se. It's just that you don't have ingredients that would be banned from FEI. And the answer to that is no, we don't use anything that's banned by the FEI.
Yeah,
I think totally. That's a straightforward
thing. Yeah, and people ask us the same thing for racing too. Are these products something I can use during racing?
Yeah, no, and absolutely. Like, I mean, sodium bicarb is a great ingredient to use, but a lot of times we just don't use it because in racing, sodium bicarb, and a lot of times these guys are pushing the line on, or people are pushing the line on how much bicarb they're feeding these horses before they go to race. So we don't put any of that into our products also, just to avoid that situation where, you know, if you are going to feed it, everything will be exactly measured to how much is getting fed.
Okay. Here's another one for you, Scott. Curious to know more about I'm skipping ahead. Is it true excess iron can? Is it true excess iron can create heart issues? My mare just recently had a cardioversion surgery. Well, that doesn't sound good. And vet mentioned high iron can create her
atrial fib to recur. Yeah, I think is what they're going for.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah. I think this is probably out of the realm of this conversation.
Yeah.
I don't. Again, this is the excess iron really comes back to how much is actually being absorbed, and this is a really, really gray area when it comes to horse nutrition. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to like say one way or the other whether this could be an issue. I would find it unlikely. It would have to be quite high, I would think, to cause that kind of issue. But it would be impossible to say for sure. Yeah. One way or the other, honestly.
I hope she's going to. That's sounds like quite a bit of a recovery, too. So got to wish her good luck with that, right? All right. Next question we've got is from Nicole, I think. Right. Curious to know. Yep. More about yeast protein. Is that the brewer's yeast or yeast?
Well, technically, yeast is brewer's yeast, although I think like the term brewer's yeast is basically dead yeast from the brewing process, or the leftover spent yeast. So that's what brewer's yeast is. And it's very, used in human nutrition. There's a lot of great nutrients in brewer's yeast. The specific yeast protein they're talking about is the yeast has a very thick cell wall. And so companies have come up with ways for fractioning that cell wall, and they use it for very specific things. They can use it for, and we use it in a lot of our products, for not stimulating, but modulating the immune system, binding toxins being two of the big ones. But what you get left over with when you fractionate the yeast cell wall is the basically yeast cell contents, which are rich in nucleotides and a very high protein, quality. So it's a very specific product. It's not brewer's yeast or yeast sac. Both those products contain the entire cell wall and obviously the cell contents as well. But what I'm speaking about, you'll see it. They use it in human foods a lot, just as a flavoring, essentially to make it. But they've because some of these companies are producing so much of this e-cell wall that they're using for very specific purposes, it's almost become a byproduct now that they can use. We can use in animal feeds as a very high quality protein source. It's not something you would find readily available though on a store shelf anywhere. We do include in several of our products though, like the ODH or the Visceral,
right.
Because again, it does have gut modulating effects as well.
And
we use it for,
you know what, that actually brings us up to another good question. Before we get to Jill's question, Nancy says, when using salt, can we just use normal table salt?
Yeah, you bet. Yeah. So again,
easy peasy.
Yeah.
Bulk barn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Costco, any place or feed store. You get feed grade salt. Understand that feed grade salt won't be iodized, so there'll be no iodine in that. Mm-hmm. Again, if you're using a good mineral vitamin, like Omni-80, for instance, you don't need to worry about whether there's iodine in your salt. So, or you can just, bulk table salt is just fine.
Good.
And I quite actually advise people to stay away from any fancy marketing of salts.
Yeah.
Like if it's, if somebody's marketing you salt, I would just run the other way.
All right, we've got a question here from Jill. Jill would like to know your thoughts on feeding MSM to young horses. I feel it's often associated with senior horses. That's true. But I've seen people use it on young growing horses as well.
Yeah, I mean, young growing horses have inflammation as well. I think you could make the argument. There's a lot of good research on MSM and just helping to control inflammation and just general joint health. It's certainly not a cure-all by any stretch, but again, it's relatively low cost, easy, and it's a great sulfur source, quite frankly. And not that we see too much in the way of sulfur deficiency by any stretch. A lot of times, because it's in the water, it's too high, but sometimes there have been diets roll across where you're like, wow, this is sulfur deficient, and so the MSM can cover that up as well.
And we actually recommend the MSM with the W3 for horses who have arthritis and issues with joints as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely, because again, it's, to me, when you look at the literature and the benefits, it's the most cost effective, the biggest bang for your buck. Whereas, and again, I mean, there's decent research on glucosamine and things like chondroitin and stuff like that. But the cost benefit, I don't know, it's not conclusive enough to say like, oh, they should be adding this.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, let's see. What do we got up here next? What's best for, this is a whole other topic. One day, Kathy, I'm making lists of all the different podcasts we're going to do. I've got iron, selenium, soy, and we will do one about insulin resistant horses. I mean, we get so many questions about insulin resistant horses at MedBurn.
Well, honestly, I think go back to the history of kind of how we ended up at ImmunoTrace and where we are, because we were one of the few companies, I guess, that would deal with a lot of these insulin-resistant horses. We would make custom formulas for them. We would recognize their unique nutritional needs and wouldn't just be like, oh, just feed them this. It's fine. What's best for an insulin-resistant horse? And I can't stress this enough because it's the same for humans. Exercise.
Get them moving.
Exercise. You got to get the diet right, but exercise will just have such a profound impact. I mean, you can essentially, you will reverse insulin resistance by increasing the level of exercise. Now, I get there's cases where it's particularly if you've had a laminitis episode where exercise is a bit prohibitive and just because of lameness, in which case, then you want to control the caloric intake. You want to get your minerals and vitamins balanced, absolutely. So it'd be similar to any recommendation, honestly, that we give any horse. Is keep your NSC low, so your starch and sugars low, below 10%. Ensure your horse is eating adequate. The minerals and vitamins are balanced. But again, I can't emphasize enough the importance of exercise. And even a little bit of, you get some high-intensity worked in there, build the horse up. You'll just see profound changes in the health of the horse.
Yeah, we've got some great articles on our website, too, about insulin resistance in horses. So if you're ever not sure about something, I always tell people, go to the website. You'll see a little magnifying lens there in the top right-hand corner. Click on that and put in what you want to know about. Yeah. There's so many articles on there.
Yeah,
so
it's,
many.
It's amazing, actually, the articles that we've built out. And again, if you go through them, they're peer-reviewed, or it's all based on peer-reviewed literature. It's all fully referenced, which again, if anybody finds things that aren't, and you're like, no, MedBurn seems to be losing their course, please write me directly because we'll rectify that right away. It's something I've been very staunch about, that the information we provide is all peer reviewed. It's not sensationalist or like a bunch of marketing. It's just good, solid information.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. How much W3O would you give to a foal?
How old a foal are we talking?
Well, let's start with what age you would start giving.
Honestly, W3. I would give it to the mare. I wouldn't give it to the foal. Feed the mare W3 about 2 to 3 months prior to foaling. And actually, I throw ODH in that as well. There's good lots of good research showing in IgG increase in colostrum, mm-hmm. which is so imperative yeah. for foal health. So I would say start with the mare first. And then I wouldn't even feed the W3 to a foal until they're about 6 months old.
Yeah.
Let them get it from the mare because the DHA will transfer into mm-hmm. the milk and the colostrum, and let them get it that way.
Let's say, you know, again, we've got, you know, yearling sales are coming up. Right. Standardbred yearling sales coming up right around the corner here in Ontario. The Keeneland sale's on right now, the Select sale, putting those yearlings on the W3.
Yeah, again, yeah, kind of hitting that 6 month age point. Yeah, absolutely. You started, mm-hmm. you know, the 30 to 60 mm-hmm. mil range, mm-hmm. And keeping on all the way through.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's no different for a horse. Like you look at brain development things, but mm-hmm. again, if we can get it through the mare first and yeah. allow the foal to nurse and look at it that way, the DHA, the beneficial mm-hmm. fatty acid, we're trying to get into them. And then as they're weaned, absolutely start at 30 mils, yeah. a low level, mm-hmm. and you can increase it up to, like, for a yearling, if you really want them to shine, mm-hmm. you want that glow.
They
on
look
them,
fabulous.
Right?
They do.
You can go up to like 100 mils at the 12 months. And they will. They will yeah. just absolutely shine.
I've seen it. Well, we use it with our brood mares and our foals, and they look fantastic. But the coolest part is that you basically can bring a horse out of the pasture where he's just been hanging around in the field. They take a towel and go like this, and he's clean
yeah.
and shiny. Like the shine on them, especially on black horses and chestnuts, it's outstanding. They look phenomenal on it. 4 months is how old Nancy's is. So
if yeah. well, if they were weaned by 4 months and you had them now on, say, some feed and hay, then they're like, they're obviously on their own now. They're mm-hmm. off the mare. Then yeah, you could start at 4 months. That's fine.
Just
but again, just get 30 mils. Like I wouldn't go. Get carried away with it.
Yeah, and don't leave it on the ground because the dog loves it. Dogs love W3, and it's totally okay for them to have it, right?
Yeah, again, slowly introduce, just like any supplement, you're like slowly introduce, because if your dog gets carried away with it, you maybe make a lot of visits outdoors.
Yeah. Okay, next one is from another Nancy. We got another Nancy here. Horses in work, we want one, add the right kind of oil. Hold on, we're going to make this bigger so I could. Horses in work, we would want to add the right kind of oil, offering a balance of calories and the DHA benefits. Not all oils are created equal. Love W3 for covering all the bases. Thanks so much, Nancy.
Yeah, Nancy, you're absolutely right. Not all oils are created mm-hmm. equal in terms of what they're providing in terms of fatty acid content. They are fairly equal in terms of energy content. But like when you start looking at the health benefits, absolutely. DHA, those long chain unsaturated fatty acids, or, and this isn't something we provide, but my cat likes to.
I know. Sorry.
I gotta stop looking at the screen. But like medium chain triglycerides, like you get out of coconut, mm-hmm. there's specific health benefits to that as well in terms of energy. Mm-hmm. It's not something we deal in necessarily, mostly because it's not that there's anything wrong with it. It's just like we haven't found to be the premier supplier of it. So we just let other people do it, I guess, for now.
Yeah. And I can tell you there's a huge supply of it in the back.
The W3. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's more coming. I mean, it's a massive vat full of W3. So yeah. That's pretty awesome. I mean, again, it's kind of cool for me because it feels like a full circle moment to, you remember when we just had like, you know, little small amounts of things that we were selling out of the trunks of our cars. And now
it's, never out of the trunk
it's
of the
awesome.
Car.
It's just amazing to see how much product there is back here. Becky Wright said that her cat likes W3 too. And I'm sure that's fine in a very small amount.
Yeah, no, I mean,
that is a beautiful shiny coat.
Dogs and cats absolutely are quite accustomed to high fat diet. So it's like, it's funny when you talk about like a dog and a cat would get a good chunk of their calories from fat, where a horse, like on a forage only diet, would only get about 2% be fat, right? Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. then there's time, and that's like sometimes you see these massive benefits to just that little bit of oil added,
right.
Particularly. And here's a great thing with IR horses, you would think it'd be counterintuitive to add oil to an mm-hmm. IR horse, and it is if it's the wrong oil. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it actually has a big benefit. I think it has a satiety effect. Mm-hmm. It also, you know, just transit time in the gut. I'm shaking the table here, sorry. But you know, there are cases because the diets can get so low in fat, when especially when we're feeding low quality forages, restrict mm-hmm. calories, that you do actually want to feed a little bit of supplemental fat, not too much again, because you want to control the caloric intake. But the specific fatty acids that we want to get into that horse can be really beneficial, particularly DHA, those long chain.
Oh yeah, that DHA is awesome. But Jill's just saying she loves W3. She gives it to her 2-year-old and her senior horses, and that's the cool part about it. I mean, really, it's any age range, as we just talked about. You could start as small as young as 4 months old, and they could take it right up to their senior years.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just adjusting it along the way. So you know, I think really, Scott, we're at 8 o'clock. this was a pretty awesome hour of questions and people, you know, giving us comments on the product and them using the product. And, you know, this really is kind of our, well, it is our inaugural run at our very first podcast, which I'd like to call, I have a couple of different names for it. The Crazy Good Podcast, because we've always called ourselves Crazy Good Nutrition, or Grain on the Brain, which I also like. And next time we learn, we're bringing wine.
We might have to do a survey on Grain on the Brain. We're not all sold on that one.
Okay. But next time we know we're bringing wine and cheese and all that kind of good stuff. We'll just have dinner.
We'll just invite everybody in instead of doing this on Facebook. They can all come in and join us in studio for the wine and cheese.
Exactly. Yeah. And a giveaway, and you get a car, right?
Well, now.
Not a car. You get W3. You get W3. Yeah. That'll work for now.
We take one more question there. Nicole's got a good question.
I missed this one. Do you have any thoughts on Tef Hay versus Timothy for metabolic horses? Are either superior for nutritional content?
So the reason I asked you to bring this one up is because, again, it comes down to so much about maturity at stage of harvest and what the actual nutrient content is. So, basically, with a metabolic horse, you're going to want low NSC. So it wouldn't matter whether it's Timothy or Tef, depending on when you harvest it. So here's a great thing, actually. I say this to a lot of people. They're like, oh, I didn't realize that. If you have an IR horse, try to cut your hay first thing in the morning because the sugar content will be the lowest.
Right.
And then as it lays out, it respires. Anyways, is what burns up even more sugar content, and you get it down lower. So again, it really comes back to, it's not so much about the species that you're picking from, with the exception of alfalfa. Some IR horses, for some reason, do not seem to tolerate alfalfa very well. Mm-hmm. And this is a great, we want to dig right into that, because I don't know why. There's a lot of different theories why, and I don't think they're right, quite frankly. So it's going to be interesting to dig into. But with Tef Hay and Timothy, again, it would just come down to it being low NSC, appropriate protein level, appropriate maturity for an insulin-resistant horse. I don't think one's necessary. Better or worse.
Okay.
Just appropriate maturity to pick for your horse.
Great. And that's how we're going to wrap up our very first podcast. I think it was pretty awesome. What about you? I mean, I know I was good.
Of course, you're amazing always.
Please. He's a wealth of information. I mean, this is a brain that we're really going to have to pick on for the next year or so. And we're going to do these podcasts regularly, right? I mean, we'll try to do them as often as we can.
Yeah, no, honestly, I mean, first of all, I want to thank everybody that's on here. I want to thank all our customers, most of all. This is legitimately a dream come true for me to be able to deliver the research program that we're putting in place, first and foremost. And that is all driven by the support we get from our customers to go ahead. And there's a great YouTube video by Emily, Dr. Leishman, sorry. Kind of talking about what we're doing, and some of the foundational work. Anyways, and so thank you everybody for being here. Mm-hmm. And by all means, anytime, reach out. Available, maybe not as responsive as I should be all the time, but I do my best.
He's a busy guy. I mean, he has to coach basketball too, right?
I leave that to the experts. I just go watch and cheer them on.
And you know what? I think the other thing we could suggest to the people watching today too is, if you have any ideas for podcasts, things you want Scott to talk
for
about.
Sure. Topics or people who are way smarter than me, we can get them on to talk about these things.
Yeah. As somebody mentioned, we could do a roadshow. I'm good. Like Florida in the winter. Great. We'll be there. Yes, more products, please. I love my horses love your products. You know what? My horse loves his products too. And that's important to all of us who are horse owners, because really our horses are our kids in some cases. I mean, certainly there's lots of working horses out there that are performing, that are competitive, that are racing, whatever. But I've got a heart horse, and I know a lot of you do too. And it's really important that we keep them healthy. So thanks, Scott, for everything today. And thanks for the job. And and I guess we'll see you all again soon. I'm not sure when we're going to do this, but when we do, we will let you know. We'll put it on our Facebook page.
Absolutely.
We'll put it on our social media and let you know. And we'll look forward to seeing you all again soon. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.